Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Hubler and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
1-32. It's a 9-point lead for the Hatchets. 37 seconds on the clock. Giardelli gets the ball off to Matthew Stevens. They get it down court, and he throws it right into the hands of the Raiders. Oh, no. Evan Julian off to Connor Craig. 3-point jumper. No good. Thompson gets the rebound. Now a 3-pointer by Fetter. No good. Raiders get the rebound. 16 seconds left. Missed it. No good. But it's not going to matter. The Washington Hatchets are going to pull the biggest upset in the state of Indiana tonight. 41-32 with 4 seconds to go in the game. And the Hatchets are going to win. What a huge upset.
This Southridge crowd is stunned, Dave.
They are stunned. And how could you not be stunned? They've got a great ball team. They've won 11 in a row.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, joined by always by the coach, Coach K, Coach Schultheis. Coach, stunned. There are a lot of people stunned in throughout the state when their teams lose, aren't there?
Joe, it was a stunning loss for the Raiders, and I know that Coach Roush and the fans and especially the players were just probably just you can hear me right now saying I can't come up with the words, because as a coach and a player, that's how I would be. I just can't come up with the words, and that was a great win for the Washington Hatchets and Coach Gene Miller. Coach Gene Miller and I have gone to battle several times when he was at Vincennes and I was at Jasper, and he is just one of the great high school coaches of his generation here in the state of Indiana. He didn't do anything unbelievable or unusual. He did what you need to do. He knew he didn't match up well with the Raiders. He couldn't run up and down the floor with them. And so he did what he needed to do. He took time off the clock, limited possessions, forced Southridge to shoot that outside shot. They weren't hitting it early. They didn't go inside or really, you know, I think it'd be safe to say that Southridge really hasn't had what you would call much of a low post game throughout the season. And they've been able to get up and down the floor and use their defense to get easy buckets. And they've hit their outside shot. But you know what, Joe, and you know this because you've been around, and I know our listeners who have been around Indiana high school basketball, college basketball, and the NCAA tournament, things just change when you get into the state tournament or when you get into the NCAA. The possessions become a little bit more valuable. You don't seem to see the basket as well. Some teams will, and some players do. But it just gets a little tougher. And in a game that Coach Miller needed to keep it close, stay within a couple possessions, and get into that fourth quarter, he was able to do that, and his boys were able to do that a little bit more. They hit big shots. And Joe, this is a young Washington Hatchet team. So to go over to the Southridge sectional where, you know, there was a great crowd because you had Vincennes and Heritage Hills playing as well, and we'll talk about that great win by Coach Matt Sisley and his Patriots a little bit later when Steve Kolb joins us. But Washington did what they had to do. Coach Miller had his guys buying in, believing, this is how we play this game if we want an opportunity to advance. And they're not very good. If you see them come out on the floor, you look at them and you say, well, this is a JV team. And basically it is. But all year long they've battled. They've kept it together. They figured it out. And Southridge, Joe, I think panicked down the stretch. Andy Eigel, who used to coach at Eastern Green, who we had on the show last week, was in attendance on Wednesday night. We talked extensively on the phone about the games. And, you know, he said Southridge just started throwing the ball, taking quick shots, panicking a little, trying to get back in the game. Or I don't even know if it's get back in the game. Try to pull a run and take a lead, and they weren't hitting those shots. And, you know, Joe, and I'm not second-guessing the coaches. I'm talking about the general makeup of the team because I didn't win every sectional I coached in. I'm sure I lost a couple sectionals, and people would say, you know, if the coach would have done a better job, they would have won. And those are valid. But here's a team that relied heavily on the perimeter game. And we all know that you can be shooting that ball well in one half, in one quarter, and you lose it in the next. It just doesn't happen for you. So developing a low post game, whether you're flashing guys in, opening up high-low opportunities, short corner with the elbow drop to the basket, you've got to do that because sometimes it's just a matter of getting some easy baskets as well to get your confidence going. Southridge couldn't do it, and it's a tough loss for them. They host the sectional this year. Washington probably had a little chip on their shoulder anyway because they wanted to host the sectional. I know the fans at Washington weren't very happy about it. But you were – I mean, we talked about that 14 matchup for that Wednesday night game, that it was going to be a great time at Southridge. And as our listeners will find out, if you don't know the scores of those games and you don't know how they ended, well, you just heard about this one, Washington – upset Southridge, and Southridge was considered, at least from rankings, one of the top 15 teams in their class. But when the perimeter shot, Joe, when the perimeter shot went away, struggled, and then you start forcing and pressing at the end, and Washington held their composure, took advantage, packed it in where they needed to pack it in. They just did a great job, and they come out of there with a first-round win. And it's a win that stunned, and it stunned me, although deep down I know anything can happen in sectional because I've seen it happen. But deep down, if you look on paper, if you look at the team, the way they've been playing, if you look at the personnel matchups, it was a stunner, was it not, Joe?
Yeah, I really thought Southridge was the team to beat in sectional this year, was my opinion, and I didn't even give much thought to the game, and was quite shocked at the outcome, but you know, sometimes that's why you have to play the game, right? I mean, you've seen it. You've seen it as a coach. You've seen it as a player.
Absolutely, and that's why Coach Matt Sisley today is smiling because his kids came out the level of physicality they needed against a very hardworking, physical Vincent Lincoln team. On paper, Heritage Hills, it's a great matchup statistically and things like that, but would they match up physically? And Heritage Hills met that and more, and we'll hear about how that game ended. But I know if Coach Sisley, who listens to the show, hey, kudos for you, Coach, and I know you probably got a word or two for me because, you know, I've questioned that. But it's great you're still alive. The Heritage Hills Patriots are still alive, and they'll go up against Gene Miller's squad coming up here tonight. So sectionals in Indiana are off and going. I mean, they're running. I mean, up in Indianapolis, if Don Schulteis is able to join us later, he can tell us a little bit about it. But Cathedral, widely considered the number five team in the Indianapolis area. Everybody had them in the top five teams in the Indianapolis area. They go out first night and get beat by Warren Central. So the sectional tournament, that's just the way it is, and that's the exciting thing. We've got the Missouri Valley Conference tournament that's kicked off, Joe, over at St. Louis. They call it Arch Madness. And Marty Simmons and his team win. Beat Drake. They'll play Wichita State coming up. We've got Great Lakes Valley tournament that'll be kicking off here at the Ford Center in Evansville. Big Ten tournament right around the corner. We'll get into IU a little bit later and Purdue as well. And I know we have some comments from listeners about both teams, and we'll talk about them, Joe. But we've got Steve Kolb, voice of both the Heritage Hills Patriots and South Spencer Rebels, and a guest we had on our show, Coach O'Brien at South Spencer, you know, he had a tough first round, get knocked out by Modern Day. It was a legitimate game, but, you know, you're connected with him, Joe, and I'm sure that, you know, excited going in, playing Modern Day, no matter what, at that level, and South Spencer bows out the first game of the tournament, but yet they had an outstanding year.
Yeah, I know that he was disappointed, but I do know, you know, he got hired late, and I'm not making excuse for him this season. He's excited about getting a full year under his belt, a full spring and a full summer with his team, and see where they're at now. He likes his young talent that he's got coming back, and you know, but you know, it's disappointing when you lose. I mean, I remember, you know, it not only affects the players and the coaches, it affects fans, family members, et cetera. When you lose, you get a little depressed about it, you know, and even though, you know, there's still an O'Brien alive, you know, Steve O'Brien's one of the assistants on Coach Matt Sicily's bench, so there's an O'Brien still alive in the tournament. We'll see how that all transpires tonight.
Well, it's going to be a great matchup again over at the Southridge Tournament. You've got Jasper and Pike Central playing, and you've got Washington and Heritage Hills playing, and I'm going to continue to stand by my pick of the Jasper Wildcats. I just believe the draw was good to them, and I believe they're going to be in a position to win. Now, Heritage Hills obviously has the ability to do it, and we'll see what happens. Washington, of course, has found a way to play another day. And you talk about how you feel. I can tell you that it wasn't until the state tournament was over that I felt better, because you just see other teams playing. Some of them you might have played during the year and beat. Some of them you feel like you should have beat, could have beat, would have beat. And that's the competitor in you. That's how much you love the game and think about your team and feel like, you know, you can move forward. Now, you don't feel that way every single year, but you always feel like you have a chance. But there are years you get knocked out. I know my second year at WC, we started with a group of juniors and sophomores the year before, shaped them into a pretty solid team, got to the championship game. We were 18 wins. Bar Eve was 17 wins. Both of us right on the cusp of the top 20 in the state. Pretty good for a couple of small schools. I mean, I think we had about 120 kids. But we went to overtime. We missed. My WC team missed literally a layup on a two-man game with time running down, which would have given us the victory. We go to overtime. We play a great game. They hit a 30-footer to win it. It happened. It happens, and you just try to work through it. So to those coaches and teams that lost and to fans, you know, there'll be another day. My dad used to say, and it was easier for him to say it when he was out of coaching, the sun comes up tomorrow. It wasn't that easy when he was coaching, but the sun does come back up tomorrow, and you just move forward. But when you invest a whole year, sometimes if you're a senior, as coaches, you're investing every day for years. It's hard. It's hard when the season ends. So I applaud those coaches. Their season's ended, but I know how hard you work. And, hey, I step up and salute those teams that have moved on to play another day. And, Joe, it'll happen over at Southridge, and it'll happen at Boonville, and it'll happen at Princeton, and it'll happen up in Indianapolis. Carmel, considered the best team in the state, well, they won. They'll continue to play. So Hoosier Hysteria is moving forward, and this weekend should be a lot of fun.
Yes, it should be. And you said that you just never know what's going to happen, and that's what makes it so much fun. And that's what, you know, I know it's class basketball, but the great thing is, nothing against Hatchet House, but just being at that Southridge gym just really excites me. But, Coach, I want to tell you something I've heard around town, and I kind of want to bring up before I go and get our next guest, and maybe you can discuss this a little bit, I know Jasper is possibly interested. I've not heard this from Athletic Director Andy Knob, but I've heard this through the rumor mill, that Jasper might be interested in trying to get in the mix of the rotation of the sectional. with their new facilities, their expanded parking that they have. You might give us your opinion on that while we're with Steve.
Well, I have no doubt that Andy and the athletic and administration at Jasper would want to do that. I mean, if you are a competitive school, folks, you want to host the tournament. Hosting the tournament's good for your community, but it's really good for your team because they're going to play at the place they've always played, and they're going to have every nook and cranny of that floor. It's easier for their fans to get there. So, yeah, I could see why Jasper would want to host, and I certainly wouldn't say no to it. I think it'll be tough because Jasper's facility isn't quite as large as Southridge or Washington. Both Southridge and Washington have great tradition hosting tournament play. So I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm not saying it can't happen, but I think they'll have to get in there and lobby and get the politics going, because what happens? What could happen is when you have the teams that are in that sectional in 3A, you have some pretty large schools. Between Vincennes and Jasper, Washington, you've got some pretty large schools. And you have a competitive Pike Central. You have a competitive Washington. You have a competitive Jasper. You have a competitive Heritage Hills. It's a large school. I mean, it's going to be tough to get all those people in the gym. And as much as you want a sold-out gym, and really that's what we want, we still want to make sure people can get into the game. So I'm not saying it won't happen. Jasper certainly has one of the finest arenas. I won't even call it a gym. I'll call it an arena on the high school level in this part of the state. They definitely have improved their parking situation, and they're worthy of a look. It would shock me. We're talking probably about a three-year rotation, which means you're changing sites, pretty much annually on that rotation. But we'll see what happens. Folks, if you've got questions or comments about sectional games you've seen, about comments on teams, or you just want to say we were wrong, and we are wrong at times, there's no doubt about it. We are wrong at times. Joe's wrong more often than I am. But what we do try to do is at least speak the truth as we see it. You can call the show at 773, write it down, 773-897-6325. Call the show. You can also text us, Facebook us. We want to hear from you. I know we've got some questions from listeners that we'll go through the mailbag later on. We're going to go to our first break. It seems like we just started, but when you're having fun and you're talking sports, and especially on a Friday afternoon or Friday morning before the semifinal rounds of the state tournament, the state of Indiana, with everything else going on, we'll be talking baseball as well later in the show with Jeff Cochran, our Reds contributor. We'll be talking some MLB baseball. But when you're talking about the state tournament, not the playoffs, in Indiana, basketball is not playoffs. It's the state tournament. When you're talking the state tournament, it goes quick. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk to the voice of the South Spencer Rebels and the Heritage Hills Patriots, who are moving on. And he had a great call. It really was a great call at the end of the Heritage Hills Vincennes game. We'll be talking with Steve Kolb. I can't wait to do that. We're going to break. You're listening to the semifinal tournament edition of the IHSA sectional and more on the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. That's IdeaFusionMedia.com.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Toyota in Jasper. You know what happens when you sell a bunch of new Toyotas? You trade for hundreds of great pre-owned cars, trucks, vans, and sport utilities. Many are certified, have factory warranty remaining, fully inspected, and they're all priced to sell. Hurry in for the best selection. Uebeler & Sons Toyota, where customers send their friends for a great pre-owned vehicle since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hi, this is Tyler Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Out to Hawkins with 20. Hands it back to Nowoski, top of the key. Spins on the dribble, into the paint. Tried to muscle a shot up, and he got the roll. Nowoski scores. Vincent's by one. Inbound to Schaefer with nine, with eight. There's Sherry. Baseline, Minto back out to Sam. To Ward with four. Three on the way. Good for Tyler Ward! And the Patriots win it!
Oh, my God. Tyler is, if nothing, he's clutch. And Tyler struggled offensively, but, man, he nailed the big one.
Tyler Ward from about 24 feet. Nothing but the bottom of the net. And the Patriots finally exercise the demon that is Vincennes Lincoln. 57-55 and on to the second round of the sectional.
Well, a pretty exciting call. And Steve Kolb joins us. And, Steve, are you over that moment? Are you ready for tonight?
Well, I'm ready. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I appreciate the compliments before you went to break. That was a lot of fun sitting, mid-court at Huntingburg Memorial in a sectional atmosphere like that and getting to call a last-second win. And my line of work is not much more fun than that.
Well, and that's really true because you are at mid-court of a historic facility, especially when it comes to the Indiana High School Basketball State Tournament, a sectional rounds. I mean, here's a game that, and I know Coach Sisley, we love Coach Sisley. I know he probably has heard a couple of our comments about wondering if the Heritage Hills Patriots were physical enough to move through this sectional tournament. I know they had struggled a little bit leading up in the last 6 weeks of the season. They come up against a nemesis in tournament play in Vincennes Lincoln. Vincennes known for their physical play. I'm sure it was that and more during that game. But this group of seniors, Sherry, Murder, among that group, they were ready. They handled it. They didn't get rattled at the end. They made the plays they need to make down the stretch. Even when Vincennes scores late, Heritage Hills, their experience, their chemistry, it works for them.
It did, and Coach Sisley didn't call for the timeout there after Nowoski made that shot to put Vincennes back up. He trusted his guys, and they moved the basketball and found the open man. And Tyler Ward, I tell you, that says a lot about the young man. He had had an interesting last few minutes of the ball game there. He had two critical steals with his team down. He converted one into a layup. He was fouled on the other, and when his team could have given him a two-possession lead, he missed both free throws. Then on an inbounds pass, he kind of made a sort of ill-advised pass that led to a jump ball and led to Vincennes getting the ball back and getting that go-ahead basket. So Tyler kind of had an up and down last 2 minutes, but he's evidently, and he's a great guy, evidently he's got a personality trait, Coach, that I know you've seen in players, the ability to stay in the now and not let what happened previously, bad or good, affect what you do now. And just took that one dribble and a three-pointer from 24 feet with absolute conviction and nothing but the bottom of the net for a guy that's not asked to score a lot, doesn't shoot a lot of three-pointers. He took that shot in a critical situation with pure conviction, and that's not something that everybody has in them, but Tyler certainly does.
Well, and you know what's great? That's what's great about the tournament, Steve. And that's what's great about teams if they're going to have success. They got to have a guy or two who step up in different moments, different games, and do some things that maybe they wouldn't normally see them do. It would be Murder. It would be Sherry. It would be someone else. Not that they can't do it or not that they can't make the shot. It's just that they wouldn't normally be that guy. But I think these guys have played together long enough. They played together with confidence. I applaud Coach Sisley on not needing to take the timeout. You know, some people would have said, if the guy misses the shot, why didn't he take the timeout? Well, I think when you coach a group long enough and you practice things and you go through repetition and you put time on the clock and you go through scenarios where the other team scores and you're confident in your guys, they know what they need to do, they know the shot they need to get or the play they need to run, you ought to be able to call it from the sidelines and go from there. Sometimes when you call that timeout, you give the defense an opportunity to adjust, make some adjustments, and take maybe something away from you. And I will tell you this, Steve. I watched the replay several times. It looked to me like it was a great coaching move not to call it, because I always say to people, the best time to score is after the other team scores. And people may not understand that, but there's just that period of adjustment after you score to get yourself back defensively and get where you need to be and get ready. And it looked like to me that Tyler Ward had a pretty darn good look, a pretty open shot. I'm not sure defensively what the Vincent Lincoln player was thinking. I know he doesn't want to foul, but you got to contest that shot better than he did. And to Tyler Ward's credit, he knocked it down. He had the confidence. He took it. Boom, he knocks it down, and Heritage Hills is advancing.
Yeah, and to expand on what you said there, the other critical aspect of that is Heritage Hills is an outstanding transition team. They get the ball up into the offensive end and to the basket as well as anybody. So I think that's good. The other reason you maybe don't take time out there is you give that group a chance to get it up and maybe even get it all the way to the rim. It turns out that's not what happened, but they still got the open look. So they're very good at getting the ball up quickly and getting into some sort of a shot very well. So obviously paid off for them in that game. And the other critical thing, not to change the subjects on you, but the critical thing in that game to finally beat Vincent Lincoln, which they've had tons of close games over the years with the Alices and couldn't get over the hump. Critical thing was they didn't turn the ball over in that game. And they've had troubles with that at times this year and had some untimely turnovers against Vincent the first time around that cost them up at Alvis Arena in the regular season, but didn't turn it over much during this game, and I thought that was a huge key for them in finally getting over the hump against the Alices.
You know, I often look at the venue, Southridge, or the Memorial Huntingburg Memorial Gym, and really for Heritage Hills, it's really in their backyard. It's a facility that the Patriots over the years have played in a lot. They're well aware of the facility and its tradition, its great atmosphere. I almost feel like, in a way, it's not a home game, but it's just right in the backyard. It's close for the fans. It's a place that the kids have probably been to many times growing up. I know when I was coaching at Jasper during the year we had the holiday tournament, the early tournament, Heritage Hills was always a part of it. So I think Heritage Hills also has a good feel for the Huntingburg Memorial Gym.
Oh, yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. Certainly more experience playing there than up at Hatchet House in Washington, although I'm not sure for this group, as experienced as they are, that would bother them as much as maybe younger teams, but sure, yeah, much more experience down at Huntingburg Memorial. They've only added Washington to the regular season schedule here in the post-Zeller era, if you will. So, and I hope that continues for a long time. I think that can be a good regular season game for both teams. But yeah, certainly much more experience playing at Huntingburg Memorial, and certainly that didn't hurt on Wednesday night.
Well, Steve, the tournament's all about living to play another day, and it doesn't matter if you win by 20, win by 1, tip a ball in, get a controversial call, as long as it goes your way and you get a chance to play another day. And the Patriots are going to play another day. They're going to play against Washington Hatchets. The Hatchets in a stunner. It was a stunner. I don't know if it's the greatest upset, but it's a pretty big upset in the opening round of the tournament. They beat the homestanding Southridge Raiders, who had been on a roll, I think winners of maybe 9 in a row, playing pretty well. They come in, Coach Miller and his young group of Hatchets get the win. Their seventh win on the year, I believe. As you look at this semifinal matchup, what's your feelings? I mean, you've seen a lot of basketball this year. You've seen the Patriots. You've seen the Hatchets. What do you look for in this matchup between the two?
Well, it's a veteran team in Heritage Hills against a younger team in Washington. But Wednesday night, I was very, very impressed with Washington's poise. And it's a group that starts one senior, two sophomores, and two freshmen. And they ask pretty much all five of those guys, including their 6'2 freshman center, to handle the basketball a lot. And they did against Southridge, and Southridge tried to trap a lot. And Southridge has outstanding length and athleticism that can make it really tough on teams on the on their offensive end against Southridge's defense. And Southridge was trying to trap to get back into the game and create turnovers. And they got a few, but Washington's young players, I thought, handled that very well. They were very poised. And that'll be a critical aspect of the game tonight, because Heritage Hills will try to pressure you. They'll do it in a little slightly different manner than Southridge will. But Washington will have to they'll have to prove they can handle that two games in a row. And for Heritage Hills, I think in the back of their minds, they were thinking, if we can get by Vincennes, we've got another shot at Southridge, who beat Heritage Hills down in Lincoln City during the regular season. And now they've got to refocus and realize this is still not a team you can overlook in Washington. They beat Southridge, so certainly they're more than capable. And they took Heritage Hills to the wire in Lincoln City back in January. Heritage Hills had to come storming back. What was it, a 26-15 fourth quarter, just to beat Washington by one, 70-69, back in January. So certainly for Heritage Hills, not a team they can overlook. I think the key in the game will be whether Washington can handle the pressure Heritage Hills brings, because the Hatchets, when they get it in their offensive zone, they're efficient. They've got a lot of guys that can shoot the basketball well, and they don't really, from what I saw against Southwoods, they don't take bad shots. So Coach Miller's done an outstanding group with this very young team, and physically they're smaller, and guys still have jerseys kind of hanging on them and draping on them a little bit because they haven't filled out. They're not physically mature yet. But, boy, they're playing the game of basketball well, and it should be a very good ball game tonight.
Well, I think one of the big points you made was poise. And, composure in the tournament becomes so important because possessions become at a minimum. They're like gold. They're just like gold. I mean, every time you get the ball, you want to be able to parlay it into something. And having composure and not turning your head and giving up a layup, forgetting to block out, you can't do those things. I do think it's very impressive in a gym that I know had a great crowd in it, that those young men, young boys, young men after their first round game for Washington did a great job. And they do have experience playing each other, and Washington was in the game. I'm going to say that maybe Heritage Hills took them a little bit lightly. I don't think that's going to happen in this semifinal game. And I think senior leadership becomes the big advantage here. Heritage Hills has been there before. They've been on this in this kind of a set situation. Washington's still learning. And as good as the coaching can be, the coach can't go out there and play the game for the players. So I'm going to look for Heritage Hills to move on, but I don't think that Washington's going to come in and change the game a whole lot of what they're playing. They're going to try to control the tempo as much as they can and hope that Heritage Hills isn't red hot from the perimeter. Everybody healthy for the Patriots?
Everybody's healthy, and they've got Justin Crane back. Justin separated his shoulder in the Jasper game in the regular season, and he's playing with one of those shoulder braces on and not playing probably as many minutes because Wednesday was his first game back. Probably not playing the minutes he played during the regular season. He was kind of their sixth man on the perimeter. But he's still available, and he can run that offense. He can knock down an open shot for you, and he can defend. So they'll get as many minutes as they can out of him when they need it. And the other guy that's going to help them potentially in this game is Caleb Sablehouse. He's a guy that was playing mostly JV minutes back in January when these two teams met. He's moved up, and he's a 6'5 junior that's really helped out and with depth down low, helping Spencer Minto on the blocks. And that's going to be a big key for Heritage Hills in this game. Southridge was, 3 of 24 from three-point range. Washington packed it in and dared the Raiders to hit the outside shot. And Southridge, a team that normally knocks them down at a very good click, could not find anything from the perimeter against the Hatchets. And Southridge, just didn't stay patient enough to try to work it in because Washington's not big. 6'2 is as big as they go on starters. They've got somebody that on the bench at 6'4, but most of their regulars are no taller than 6'2". So Heritage Hills, has an advantage down there if they will continue to work and try to get the ball into Spencer Minto and Caleb Sablehouse and even Gavin Schaefer, who here in the second half of the season has shown a willingness and an ability to get down on the block and play underneath the basket with his back to the basket at times. So that'll be the key, whether Heritage Hills can get it down there and will work to get it down inside against Washington.
Well, I do believe that Heritage Hills brings more balance onto the floor, and I really believe that's important when it comes sectional time. I know I took teams over to the sectional. We were really good at a certain thing, and we were able to exploit it during the regular season, but it just changes in the tournament. And if the more balance you have, the better off you'll be. And I'm not talking about just scoring balance. I'm talking about the ability to go inside and get baskets as well as shoot on the perimeter. And I also think getting through that first round just helps everybody calm down a little bit, helps the nerves even out, and your young men begin to just play basketball like they know how after they get through that first round. Before we let you go, Steve, can you give us just a little bit your insight on South Spencer, first-year coach O'Brien? They had a successful season, but they bow out in the first game. Just your thoughts overall on the Rebels this year.
I think it was a good first season for Coach Ted O'Brien at South Spencer. He had a group of five seniors that were in a tough spot because they had played, counting Coach O'Brien, for three head coaches in their 4 years. And that's not easy on any group to change things that often and try to maintain any sense of flow. And they did a pretty good job with it this year. They went through a stretch in January where they had like a five-game losing skid. And they were in the middle of January, they were sitting at 6-6, and the season could have gone anywhere. From there, they were down to Tell City on the road at halftime. And I don't know if you call it a come-to-Jesus moment or if Ted O'Brien had the halftime speech of his life. We'll never know. But they came out and turned things around in the second half, and that turned their season around, and they won 7 of 9 to finish the regular season. And ran into a modern-day team that shoots the ball well. They spread the floor well and create a lot of their offense off the dribble drive. And I thought South Spencer played well in that game. Maybe didn't hit some shots that they had been hitting, and neither team shot the ball just lights out in that game. And 4-point game that was close throughout, and just Modern Day was a little better that night and moved on. But I don't think that diminishes the fact that this was a pretty successful first season, and the cupboard not bare there at South Spencer. There's some talent returning for Coach O'Brien here for the next several years, so it'll be interesting to see how that program continues to grow.
Well, Steve Kolb, you'll be center court again. Two good semifinal games to go on at Honeyberg Memorial Gym in this 3A sectional class. You've got Pike Central and Jasper hooking up. And then literally, folks, Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus, Indiana, that is. Heritage Hills and Washington, they're fighting and battling and scratching and clawing for an opportunity to play in that coveted championship game on Saturday night. I've been in that game four or five different times, and boy, you just want to get there. You want to have that chance. Steve, I know it's going to be an exciting night.
Yeah, I believe it will.
Well, thanks for being with us, Steve Kolb. Good luck to the Patriots, teams that are out there. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the other sectionals as far as the opening rounds went, who's still alive, who's out. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Have you ever heard a car ad that looks too good to be true or has fast-talking fine print?
Buy before midnight tonight. Maybe okay, maybe not. You probably aren't eligible for this event. Ubelar's prices are better, but you can't know that.
You want to hear Ubelar's fine print? That's right, silence. Our prices will save you money, huge inventory, even bigger discounts. Ubelar & Sons Chevy Cadillac in Jasper, where customers send their friends since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. The theme song from the great show on television years ago, White Shadow, the White Shadow. Used to love to watch that show. It was one of the truly first shows on television, prime time, where you got to watch high school basketball unfold. And life as a high school player, coach, before Friday Night Lights and everything else came along, it was the White Shadow. And I love that show. And, Joe, I know you love that show, too.
Oh, that was a great show. I miss watching it. I'm going to have to see if I can find it somewhere on the Internet. After looking up that song today, I start thinking, God, you know, I want to watch that show again. That was always a fun show. But, Coach, you know, I brought up in the first segment about Jasper possibly throwing their name in, not having any inside sources, just Jasper rumor mill. But I have a comment from Randy Wagler of Montgomery asked, maybe sectional 63 could rotate in the Hatchet gym when it's not in use, especially if Jasper gets in the rotation. Each team in sectional 63 could take a turn hosting it, and therefore, after paying some to WHS, Washington High School, the school hosting could keep the proceeds. That would give the small schools a chance to profit from sectional 63. What do you think? That's what he asked.
Well, it's an interesting thought, and I think that we will see the larger venues, if they are not hosting sectional round tournaments, maybe some other sectionals will rotate from different classes over there into those sites. It could easily be done, especially if it's centrally located and then that type of thing. As far as money distribution, folks, this is all an IHSAA thing. I'm not sure if the same distribution process works today as it did before class basketball. But when I was an athletic director, the sectional round of the tournament, the IHSAA split all the money between the schools. It was tickets sold. The number of tickets you sold, that was your money. And then expenses were paid to the host site, things like that. And I'm sure somebody may know this concrete in and out, and they're kind of the ABC, A to B, B to C guys, and they'll say, well, that's not quite true, Coach K. And it may not be, but I know that the season tickets we sold were important because the more season tickets you sold, the more of a share you got from the hosts, from the tournament. The sectional round, most of that money, well, all the money, at least as I remember it, was given to the participants of the sectional at that site. And that's why teams at Southridge loved it. Some of the smaller schools who didn't have big athletic budgets, you operated your athletic budget on the money you made off the basketball sectional. And I can tell you, as athletic director at Washington Catholic, we operated our athletic budget off the sectional proceeds that came in from the tournament. When you went to the regional, you got a specific designated amount. All the teams did, and it wasn't substantial. It was great, though, for a small school like Washington Catholic, but that's how it did. But that's an interesting – I would hate to see Huntingburg Memorial Gym ever sit vacant in March. I hate to see the Hatchet House sit vacant in March. And if Jasper is able to get in that mix in the rotations, you know, maybe that will happen. Maybe some of those other classes can use the bigger venues for their site. I would see no problem with it. It just all depends on the IHSA, how they want to look at it. It certainly would create pretty much a neutral site for everybody. Steve Kolb did a great job. We appreciate him being on, Joe, obviously. And Heritage Hills, they'll have a big matchup. And as I said, Joe, all of Santa Claus will be in the Huntingburg Memorial Gym. That is Santa Claus, Indiana. If you're not familiar with Heritage Hills High School, one of the communities that makes up Heritage Hills is called Santa Claus, Indiana. So getting some feedback, Joe. Not sure what's going on your end of the thing, but through.
I'm not sure. I'm getting some texts from people, so that maybe that's what's happening. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, Joe, let's take a couple minutes. Coming up later in the show, we will be talking some Major League Baseball. We'll be talking some Cincinnati Reds with our contributor, Jeff Cochran, and also just some other things going on in Major League Baseball. A couple things before we talk about some sectionals. Dr. Frank Jobe passed away, and you remember Dr. Frank Jobe, the Tommy John surgery. Great surgeon, thought out of the box and figured out how to save many pitchers' careers. We'll talk a little bit about Robinson Cano's comments when Jeff Cochran joins us. You know, he went from the Yankees to the Mariners, and he's made some comments. Lakers get blown out by 48 points. Boy, what a mess in L.A., if you're a Laker fan, that is. And Pacers, Joe, what's going on with our Pacers? They've hit kind of a hiccup, a bump in the road. They did clinch the playoff spot, but struggling a little bit. Paul George only 2 points the other night.
Yeah, well, they'll right the ship. It's the year. It's the Pacers' year. I'm calling it right now. Much like you're calling for a Jasper win in the sectional, I'm calling for a Pacer championship in the NBA championships, and they'll right the ship. They'll be fine. Going through a little lull right now.
You know, the thing, Joe, about the NBA, it's such a long season. Unless you're just on the line for a playoff spot, it's such a long season that it's I always think it's comical. Folks, I always think it's comical when the ESPN or Mothership announcers, in order to have something to talk about to fill their time, will make a big deal out of a couple losses by a team. Or they started slow in the first – you know, they were talking about the Heat. Well, in two of the last five games, the Heat have struggled the game. And it hurt them in the end with a loss to the Spurs and someone else. Folks, two of the last – what about all the other games they've won? It's just sometimes we need something to talk about, so we try to create something where there's nothing. Did they start slow when LeBron James had 61 or 60 the other night? The NBA season, Joe, and you know this, I mean, it's just a long season. You're going to go through ebbs and flows. You know, there's very few teams that stay at a high-octane level throughout. We can recall the Bulls. We can recall the Lakers and the Celtics. But for the most part, everybody hits some of those bumps.
Well, I'll tell you what, I really didn't realize people were having bumps because it seemed like the Mothership was only talking about the earth-shattering news of LeBron James wearing a mask while he was playing there for a while. You know, my wife doesn't usually comment on NBA basketball, but the other night we were watching some TV, and she just finally looked at me and she goes, "Is he the first player to ever play with a mask?" She goes, "I'm getting tired of it." She usually does not comment on NBA, but she did make that comment, and she was pretty adamant about it when she made it. She goes, "My God, I've seen other people play with masks. This isn't earth-shattering news."
You know, the other thing that I think is funny, and I don't know how much truth is going to be to it, and if there's some Bulls fans out there that want to comment on it, feel free, or just NBA fans in general. If I was the Chicago Bulls, if there's any truth to this, I would I would squelch it. I would nip it in the bud, as Barney Fife would say. I would stop it immediately. Talk of acquiring Carmelo Anthony. Folks, if you want to derail any hopes, then add Carmelo Anthony to your team. Unless you've got strong enough personalities on the floor. I know Tom Thibodeau is a strong personality on the bench as a coach. But, he demands defense. He demands ball movement. Maybe he can change Carmelo, but I think it'd be tough to do. Bulls don't do it, Wade. It's ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous. Carmelo Anthony has not proven to me or to anyone that he is going to put the team aspirations ahead of his own aspirations. And I don't know that Carmelo Anthony is selfish, so to speak. I just don't think he gets it. Sometimes guys don't get it. They just don't get it.
If I'm not mistaken, I think Noah is the one behind it. He's the one that's saying that he needs to come there, and he's the one that's brought this to out in the public that he needs to come to the Bulls. And I agree. I mean, you know, Carmelo Anthony even made the comment, well, you know, Derrick Rose is my son's favorite player. I was like thinking, God, you're not his favorite player? I would hope if I was in the NBA, I would be my kid's favorite player, you know?
I just hope that doesn't happen, Joe. And I really do want together. I know that they will battle with the Pacers if I say that, but I just don't think Carmelo is the guy. I don't get it. And again, this, you're right. This is coming from Noah, so maybe he needs to concentrate on playing. And he's played hard all year. Don't get me wrong. He has played hard all year. Just stick to playing. And stick to playing and let the team management take care of the rest. Joe, let's cover a few sectionals while we've got some time before we go to our next break and our next guest. We know what happened over in Huntingburg Memorial Gym. Let's talk about some of the others in the southern part of the state, and then we'll expand from there. In Evansville at the 4A sectional at North High School in the opening round, Harrison. Man, I was really down on these guys, Joe. They dominate Wrights, who I thought had a real shot at winning this sectional, had played well down the stretch throughout the year. Harrison dominates them. Ernie Duncan and his brother Stanley, I think, had a great game. It might have been Everett. There's three of them out there. 72-55. I got to be honest, Joe, I didn't see this one.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked by that score, too. I really thought that Rice would give them a battle, and you know, maybe they're peaking at the right time, you know, coming together and as a team. And, you know, Ernie realizes this is his last go-around, and he wants to go out in a big way.
Well, Ernie definitely has the mentality and the motor to lift that team up a little bit more. He really does remind me. He's not as talented as he was, but he reminds me a lot of Michael Lewis in his mental toughness and his ability to put a motor in gear and get others to do the same. And people say, well, you can't get others. Yeah, I tell you what, some guys just seem to make people around them play better, play harder. Shouldn't have to be that way, guys, but that's what leaders do. In the semifinals at North, it will be Central taking on host North, Central 14-6, and playing pretty good basketball. They're very athletic, takes on North, not very tall. They've had their struggles this season. It'll just depend if they can come out in the second half, if North can come out in the second half and just play good basketball. They've seemed to struggle in the second half. Castle, who definitely is in a hunt to win that sectional, 15-7, will play Harrison, 16-8. Those will be two good games, and especially the Castle-Harrison game. I think Castle beat Harrison the last time out this season. In 3A at Princeton, Bossy pounded Gibson Southern, no surprise. Princeton pounded Boonville, no surprise. Mount Vernon 8-14 will play Bossy. I see Bossy winning that game. Memorial 14-6 versus Princeton 17-6. The last time these two teams played in the regular season, Princeton hammered Memorial. Hammered them. At Memorial by 20 points. I don't see that happening. I see this a close game, and I'll give the edge to Memorial this time. Class 3A at Huntingburg, we talked about. Class 2A at North Knox. Andy Igel was on last week. He talked a little bit about this sectional. Linton Stockton beat Sullivan. Two good teams. One of them had to go. Linton Stockton took them out 51-43. Since Sullivan has gone down, Joe, since Sullivan has gone down to 2A, they've struggled. The Golden Arrows of Sullivan, Indiana, can't seem to break through. It's tough sectional. Eastern Green, big, strong win over North Central. That was expected. North Knox, who's been playing well, will play Linton Stockton. South Knox, a very good South Knox team, 16-5, plays Eastern Green in those semifinal matchups. At Boonville, North Posey hammers Tell City. Modern Day takes out Ted O'Brien's South Spencer Rebels. Perry Central, a good Perry Central team, will play North Posey. Forest Park will take on Modern Day, and then you'll have the championship from there. Class A at North Davies, Bar Eve, in a battle for 3.5 quarters with North Davies. I said that would be the best game of the tournament. I think I'm going to be right, but I'll tell you, a team I talked about early in the year when we started talking high school basketball, Vincennes Rivet in that class, even though they're 10-12, they've played well the last few times out. Both of those teams play teams that they should beat. Bar Eve will play Shoals, a not very good Shoals Jug Rocks team, and Vincennes Rivet will play a not very good Washington Catholic team. Washington Catholic 4-15. And Bar Eve plays Shoals 2-17. Look for Rivet and Bar Eve to meet in the championship, and I'm hoping, number one, Bar Eve will beat Rivet. And, Joe, a side note, that sectional final, if it is Rivet and Bar Eve, may not take place on Saturday. Do you know why?
Because the Vincennes Rivet girls are always in the state finals.
Exactly. Vincennes Rivet girls will be in their fifth state championship game in 6 years. Coach Young's Vincennes Rivet girls will be in their fifth state championship game in 6 years. They did win one of those a couple years back. They'll take on Oregon Davis. So for those of you listening up in the Davis County area who would take in that game, or Knox County, if Rivet wins and Bar Eve plays Rivet in the championship game, that game may be moved to Monday. Just keep that on the back of your mind, because that could happen. And it makes sense. They want to make sure that the fans from the schools have a chance. And Vincennes Rivet is not a big school. It's a very close community. So they want to make sure they can all go watch each other. At Tecumseh, a local team, Northeast Dubois, will play Cannleton. Cannleton 2-18, Northeast Dubois 9-12. They will play the winner of Tecumseh 10-12 versus Wood Memorial. Whoever wins the Dubois-Cannleton game will play the winner of Tecumseh-Wood Memorial in the first round. Wood Memorial, playing extremely well, got up 15-1 and took Evansville Day School out. Now, Evansville Day School didn't have a great year, Joe, but Evansville Day School plays a pretty decent schedule, and even though they didn't have the great year they've had the last few years, that was a big win for the Trojans of Wood Memorial. And they'll play Tecumseh, and then we'll have a championship game. I think Northeast Dubois will be in that championship game. What do you think, Joe?
Oh, I think so, too. I think Dubois has a good chance of taking that sectional. I'll tell you what, Coach, I do want to mention that an end of an era happened the other night, too. Union Duggar was defeated by Eminence 59-46, and they will be consolidating schools, and that would be the end of Union Duggar playing in the IHSA state championship.
Joe, that's a great point. And for those of you out there who know what we're talking about, Union Duggar up near Sullivan, Indiana, south of Terre Haute. I used to coach against them when I was at Washington Catholic. A very hardworking group of young men, a proud program. The financial changes in the way the state compensates the school systems. Union Duggar started to run at a deficit. Their board voted to close the school. I hate it. I'm sad about it. We tweeted about it. We were hoping some benefactor could come to the aid of that school and keep it going. And I'm going to tell you why real quickly before we go to break and we have our next guest. Folks, communities lose their identity when they lose their school to die. And you could say, oh, Coach, Union Duggar, that area was dying. But it was still there, and they still had their school, and they still had pride, and they still worked hard. And I know the coach there used to play for them, and he played against me when I was coaching at Washington Catholic. I hate when communities lose their school. When these consolidations happen that really have not proven to be better than community schools, and then they don't keep a great school there, communities die. People move away. Businesses close up. The local gas station closes down. The convenience mart closes down. And you drive through and you say, this used to be a neat town. Isn't it sad to see the ghosts of the town in this in these buildings? This school hasn't been used in 25 years. It is sad. You know, when Ireland consolidated with Jasper, it was very difficult for years. But Ireland has just done a great job of keeping their community spirit up and keeping their community strong. So I hate to hear that. We got a lot to talk about yet. We're going to switch gears in this segment. We're going to talk some Major League Baseball. Believe it or not, not everybody that listens to our show loves basketball. They love baseball. And spring is here. You really can't see it necessarily, although we've had a couple of nice days, and we're supposed to have a few more before the cold sets in again. But Major League Baseball is in spring training. Games are going on. Pitchers are taking the mounds. Contracts are being signed. Evaluations are being made. Rosters will be cut at some point. And one of the teams that a lot of our listeners like to hear about are the Cincinnati Reds. And we have our Cincinnati Red MLB contributor, Jeff Cochran. He's going to be joining us right after we come back from this break. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Chevy Cadillac, Toyota Scion in Jasper. We've all heard the commercial, 15 minutes could save you 15. Folks, let me tell you, it won't take 15 minutes for us to save you money. Give Ubelar's a call at 1-800-937-USA1 or visit us online at ubelar.com. We'll tell you the facts, treat you right, no bait and switch, and best of all, we will save you money. Ubelar Chevy Cadillac, Toyota Scion in Jasper, where customers send their friends for a lifetime of savings in 15 minutes or less since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
I love Mickey.
Mickey who?
You know who? The fellow with the celebrated swing. Oh, I love Mickey.
I love Mickey too, believe me. The great Mickey Mantle, the New York Yankees slugger, who for some reason Bob Costas and the rest of the sports world failed to mention that Mickey Mantle is the all-time World Series leader in home runs. Now we've gone to all these expanded playoffs, and they make a big deal about all these other guys and all the extra games they played in. But when it comes to the real Mr. October or the real World Series situation, Mickey Mantle is still the all-time leader in home runs. And speaking of all-time greats, we've got our contributor. He's our Major League Baseball Cincinnati Reds contributor. Jeff Cochran joins us. And believe it or not, before we went to break, Jeff, I was talking about signs of spring, and I said you really can't see it yet, although we've had a couple nice days. I hear it tapping on the window in my studio. I look out, and there's two squirrels there, letting me know that spring is in the air, and they're ready to get out and play. And so are the baseball teams. Jeff, get us up to date on what's going on with the Cincinnati Reds.
Well, Ken, it's been a sleepy off season for the Reds. Really, the Reds did very little in the off season. They signed infielder outfielder Skip Schumacher, the former Cardinal, former Dodger, to a 2-year deal, and really that was about it. They've added some minor bench pieces along the way, and of course the big news for the Reds in the off season was extending Homer Bailey a 6-year deal worth $107 million. So they're trying to gain commitments really from their entire starting rotation. Matt Latos and Johnny Cueto will both be free agents after the 2015 season. So there's still some plenty of work to do for the Reds hierarchy to see what they can do to get the other guys signed.
Jeff, let's just talk a little bit about the Homer Bailey deal. There were some arbitration discussions. Homer's side wanted 11. The Reds were offering 8. They end up doing a 6-year, $107 million. They've got the big bottle contract sitting back there, which I don't even know that he's into the big stuff yet. But, Jeff, tell us a little bit about, at least from your standpoint, was the whole point for the Reds organization to get Homer to move towards a long-term deal, therefore the difference in the arbitration numbers, their whole plan was to get him into a long-term deal anyway?
I absolutely. I think that when you look at Bailey would be a free agent after this season had he not signed that deal. And I think the Reds' intention was to sign him to a long-term deal. Homer Bailey's career arc really patterns that of former Cardinal pitcher, this guy who just retired, Chris Carpenter. If you look at their numbers at the same ages, they're almost identical. And I think that they view Homer to be the Chris Carpenter type pitcher as he enters his 30s. So I think that they wanted to sign him long term. The Reds TV situation is something that's going to come into play after the 2015 season. Their TV contract will be up, and that's as you've seen from other teams. The Phillies just signed a major deal in the offseason. The Dodgers signed a monstrous multi-billion-dollar deal before the 2013 season. The Reds TV ratings are actually quite high compared to other teams. Now the market is much smaller, obviously, but they anticipate a large windfall from TV revenue after the 2015 season. They also are getting additional money from the National Baseball TV contracts as well.
Okay, well, I was going to say, and you hit the point for us, as you always do before, I don't even need to say it, and that is, I get the ratings, but the market number, the population number is much smaller. Here's my question for you before we start talking about that roster a little bit and the coming season. You know, there's some real question marks out there about the ability to sign these guys and give them the money that they're going to command if they continue to play well. At what point do the Reds say, we've got this gigantic contract with Votto, now we've got Homer Bailey? I mean, how much more can they actually put out, and who will they have to let go of?
That's a really good question, and I know that, you know, as I said, they're going to be faced with those decisions, not after this season, but after next season. Matt Latos and Johnny Cueto will both be free agents after the 2015 season, and those are two big arms, the number one and number two starter for that organization. And those are two big arms to have to fill. Latos is younger and has been viably really more healthy than Cueto has been the last couple of years. And as such, I think he's going to get a bigger deal. He could get
You know, unless the Reds try to extend him before he becomes a free agent. If he goes to free agency, he could end up with a $200 million deal. And I don't know that the Reds will be able to afford that. With Cueto, it's a different story. I think if they were to choose at this point who they would want to keep, if they had to choose between the two, they would choose Latos, so, simply because he's younger and healthier.
And when you look
again,
at
the money
Reds,
may not be there.
Yeah, and when you look at the Reds farm system, obviously if the money's not there, you've got to look for at acquiring somebody for lesser money, or you got to look at the farm system. And since we are in spring training and a lot of the farm system talent gets a chance to at least work out, be seen a little bit more by the big club, are there some arms down there, some other guys that you're looking at, that you're hearing about, that the Reds feel really good about?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, one name that saw a lot of major league time last year, Tony Cingrani, allowed the Reds to really allow Bronson Arroyo to walk and sign a free agent deal with the Arizona Diamondbacks. So Cingrani has moved into the rotation as a starter to take Arroyo's place. Two guys who may or may start the season at Double-A, may start at Triple-A, Louisville. The first of which is Robert Stevenson. He's the 2011 first-round draft pick. And Robert Stevenson simply is a bona fide number one starter prospect. He throws 96 to 98 on a fastball, has a high velocity slider, and has done very well developing other breaking pitches. So he is a guy that could actually make the jump to the major league squad as a September call-up or as an injury call-up if something happens to one of the Red starters in the season. The other guy is a Michael Lorenzen, who actually was a 2013 draft pick, a college player out of Cal State Fullerton, was primarily an outfielder, but did come in as their closer for Cal State Fullerton. And Lorenzen has been told by the Reds he's only going to be a pitcher. He has a very, very fluid pitching motion, a natural motion, and he, too, is throwing 95 to 98 on his fastball in spring training. And is a guy that, while he doesn't have as much experience as a pitcher, the good news is he doesn't have as many innings on his arm as a normal pitcher at this stage would have. And he is a guy that, if he has a great season in the minors, and either in Double-A or Triple-A, he could possibly make the jump this year, but would be more likely to be a Red in 2015. So there is some depth in the rotation. They also have some veteran depth with guys like Jeff Francis, the former Rocky, and the former Yankee, Chin-Min Wang. Those are guys that are signed to minor league deals. So if there is an injury among one of the Reds' five starters, you'd likely see one of those guys get called up early in the season, and possibly Robert Stevenson later in the season.
All right. So there is some potential there, and they have some work to do with some of their established guys. So they do have some people who can maybe fill the vision, because the Cardinals don't sit back. They seem to be able to plug in, and maybe that's a great formula to follow. But let's talk about some of the established guys. Votto, he came off an injury last year. He didn't have the pop in his bat. Let's face it, I know Reds fans who love Votto are going to get mad at me, but he didn't have the pop in his bat that he should have. Are we going to see, from what you're seeing so far in spring training, and I know it's early, really early, is Joey Votto going to be a 310, 320, 325 hitter and just a 30 home run guy? Or do you think this guy, and it's not the 30 home runs isn't bad, it's really good, can he find the 40 home run mark again? Is it there?
I don't know that it ever was there. I mean, his career high is 37. Votto is going to be a guy that gets on base a lot. He's going to be a guy that hopefully drives in more runs this year. But you're right, he did not have came off two knee surgeries at the end of 2012. He did not have the pop. Excuse me. He did not have the pop in his bat at all, and he admitted so until August, and that's really when he finally felt normal. He's had an off season now where he could get his more normal routine, as opposed to rehabbing his knee. He's back on a more normal schedule now, And I think you're going to see his home run numbers come up, his RBI numbers come up. Before he got hurt, he was really less of a home run hitter than more of a doubles hitter. And I think you're going to see those numbers creep back up. I don't know that he'll ever get the 40 home runs, but I think, you know, the guy batting behind him this year, Jay Bruce, is a legitimate 40 home run candidate. And I think Jay Bruce is really improved every season and is really at a point where he could break out to possibly be an MVP candidate.
And that was my next question for you, Jeff, is who's your breakout player? Is it Jay Bruce, and has he matured enough? And I'm not talking about physically. We know he's got unbelievable physical skills. Has he matured enough mentally, you know, the day in, day out, being a consistent hitter? So your feeling is this may be the breakout year for Jay Bruce?
I think so. I think his year last year was really his career best, although he had higher home run totals the year before. His RBI numbers, his batting average, everything was really a career best for Jay Bruce last year. And I think what you're going to see is that trend continue. He already has maybe the best arm in right field in the game. It's a crime he hasn't won a gold glove. So his defensive skills are there. His offensive skills, I think you're going to see him really blossom into an MVP RBI-type candidate with possibly 40 home runs. And, you know, he's a guy, I think, under the Brian Price regime, I think you're going to see a lot more use of speed than you saw in the Reds in the past. They're going to be aggressive on the base pass. Jay Bruce is young. He's healthy. Let's not forget that Jay Bruce is still only 26 years old. So he is not even close to the prime of his career yet. It just seems like he's been around forever because he's, you know, he came up when he was 20 or 21 years old. But he's still a guy that can steal base, and I think you're going to see a lot more aggressiveness on the base pass. There's two other breakout candidates for the Reds, and obviously the main eyes are going to be on Billy Hamilton. He will lead off and play center field, and he is a threat to steal a base anytime he gets on. Now, the old adage goes, you can't steal first. What we've seen and thus far, and again, it's early from Billy Hamilton in the spring, is a very, very patient hitter. He is driving pitchers crazy with 9 and 12 pitch at bats. Drawing walks, slapping balls down the, and out just barely in outfield, or bunting for base hits. And when he gets on, he's automatically at second, and he's automatically at third. And all it takes is a fly ball to get him to score. So Billy Hamilton's going to be a key.
You know, on Billy Hamilton, and you made the great point because that's the question. You know, is he patient enough? Is he mature enough to take pitches so he can get on first? I really, you know, last year everybody was saying, oh, bring him up, get him on. I put him out there more. I really liked the Reds' patience with him, to be honest, because he's not what you call an accomplished hitter yet. He has incredible speed, but you really need to get those things in place to take advantage of that.
No question. And I think the Reds did a good job in waiting for him. And ideally, the Reds would have signed, you know, the Reds could have signed Shin-Soo Choo. They might have been a little more patient with Billy Hamilton. But that was one contract that they allowed to walk along with the Royal. And you know, now it's his time. Like I said, he can't steal first. But if he's showing the patience in the regular season that he is currently in spring training, I think his – even if he has a low on-base percentage, he's still going to create a lot of havoc by the time he does get on base, and I think he's a key to this Reds team. One thing he also is going to do is he's going to play phenomenal defense. Although he's only been a center fielder for 1 year, he's going to be a significant upgrade defensively for the Reds in center field over Shin-Soo Choo. So you're going to see runs saved by his ability to get the balls in the outfield.
And you got one more player you think it could be candidate for a breakout year.
Well, you know, the Reds had a two-catcher system the last several years, even going back to Ramon Hernandez and Ryan Hannigan. In the offseason, they traded Ryan Hannigan for lefty pitcher. It was a three-team trade, and in the trade they got lefty pitcher David Holmberg. That allows Devin Mesorosco, the 2009 number one pick for the Reds, catcher. He will be the primary starting catcher for the Reds. It won't be a situation where, he's going to catch certain pitchers and the backup Brian Pena is going to catch other pitchers. Mesoraco is going to get the bulk of the time behind the plate. And he is a guy that the Reds feel is ready to be their starting catcher. I think defensively he's ready. He was an outstanding offensive catcher in the minor league system, and he has shown flashes of brilliance in the regular season with the Reds. But playing on limited time, he has not been able to get the at-bats he's needed to show that. He's going to get those at-bats this year, and I think he is a key part of this Reds system and this Reds offense this year. He's got to produce out of the seventh or eighth hole in the lineup for the Reds to have a shot at catching the Cardinals.
Yeah, and let's hope he can stay healthy in the whole process. Before we end the segment, Jeff, what about our boy, the Cuban Missile?
Well, he had a rather unflattering article written in ESPN a few weeks back talking about how lazy he was, and he's been rather adamant in negating those claims that were made in that article. He's come out in spring training, and Brian Price, the manager, is really focused on stretching him out like they've done in the past in spring training. They're running him out more than one inning. They want him to work on secondary pitches, and it's great if you have a 104, 105-mile fastball, although last year his peak was 102. But you still have that fastball, but if you can – the 91-mile-an-hour slider or even an 84-mile-an-hour changeup, which he's working on, you're going to be even more unhittable than you already are, because if the arm slot looks the same on that slider and the changeup as it does on the fastball, guys aren't going to know when to swing. And that's something that's going to be a great benefit for the Reds coming out of the coming into the ninth or the closer spot in the lineup. The problem with that is I still believe Aroldis Chapman has number one starter stuff, and apparently that ship has sailed and will not happen. He will not be a starter. He will be continue to be the closer. I wouldn't rule out, though, you're going to see if there's a situation in the eighth inning instead of the ninth, I wouldn't be surprised if Brian Price uses him more in the eighth inning as well as bringing him out for the ninth, because I think he's still only pitching, 70 to 80 innings a year, and really has a lot of innings in that arm left. So he's under contract for, I believe, through 2016 or 2017. So he's going to be a Reds closer for a number of years to come.
Well, as always, Jeff, great stuff. And we'll have you back in a couple of weeks to talk a little bit more, not just about the Reds, but some of the other people in that division. And go ahead.
Yeah, well, in a matter of weeks, your Friday, April 4th show, I would like to participate because I will be attending my 23rd straight NCAA Men's Final Four. So maybe we can talk a little Final Four on the 4th as well, too.
Absolutely. And if I'm not there, you can give us the live report. You can be the man on the scene.
That sounds great. Well, if you are there, you better let me know.
Jeff, thanks a lot. Again, great stuff. I'd like to see Chapman be a starter, but we'll just have to see what happens. They know more about him than we do. Again, Jeff, thanks a lot. There's our MLB Reds segment. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we got the mailbag. Joe's got some questions loaded for me, so we'll find out what they are, and we appreciate our listeners for sending them in. Going to break, you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Thanks, guys.
This is Tony Uvalar with Uvalar & Sons Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Right now, Uvalar's has a huge selection of awesome pre-owned vehicles, cars, trucks, vans, sport utilities, in most all price categories, and they're all priced to sell. Some are certified, and some have special low APRs, but best of all, they are all priced to sell. Uvalar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper, where customers send their friends for great pre-owned vehicles since 1929.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee.
You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. That's IdeaFusionMedia.com.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
It's not the U.S. Postal mailbag. It's not the Joe mailbag. It's the Coach K mailbag.
New York and New Jersey love Coach K. Go Hoosiers! Coach K speaks the truth! Woo!
Now here is Coach K and Joe with this week's Coach K's mailbag.
And we're back on the show, and we've got the mailbag coming up. Before we go to our first question, I do want to mention, folks, April 15th, coming up quick, the tax man cometh, can't avoid him. That arm from Uncle Sam reaches all over this country. What are you doing about it? Have you gone to see Janet Schultheis and Beth at Edward Jones? Have you gone to see them to give you some financial advice, to look at your portfolio, to give you some risk tolerance programs to follow? Have they taken your IRAs that you're letting your former employee or employer handle? They don't care about your money anymore. You need to take those and roll them over. Get those 401ks rolled over into IRAs with Janet Schultheis and Beth at Edward Jones. And 529s, I'm just getting ready to finish writing checks for my kids at college. And you get the tax breaks with the 529s, but you got to go get them set up and you got to get some advice. So go see Janet Schultheis. The whole deal is about perpetuation and making money, taking advantage of your hard work and your effort. Go see her. Give her a call, 812-479-8215. Put us on. Listen to us while you're calling them, 812-479-8215. She'll sit down with you, figure out where you're at, what you need to do. Joe, let's hit the mailbag.
Okay, first question comes from John Bots Magic Bottorf. He was on sabbatical, and he apologized to us for a couple weeks of no questions, but he's got a question, and it is, after seeing the NCAA men's basketball season unfold, what is your final four, and what do you see as ultimately the season champion, and why? Secondly, is the Big Ten overrated or underrated?
I'm going to take the second part of his question first. If I knew the first part of his question, Joe, you and I would be taking all the money we have, heading to Vegas, and putting it on the line and winning a lot of money. And then we'd just get a big studio in New York City and run the show out of there, and that would be awesome. The second part of the question, I have said, you have said, our contributor, Don Schultheis out of Indianapolis, has said, and you can go back to different podcasts, folks. You can go to CoachKandJoeShow.com and look at, get our podcast from earlier in the year. We've all said we felt the Big Ten was overrated. Now, Josh Houchin, one of our sponsors, he's not going to like that because Michigan. But that's exactly why the Big Ten's overrated, because here's a Michigan team that lost all those key players and somehow win a championship. Now, it did help that Michigan State, Tom Izzo's team, had those injuries. Payne, Dawson, Appling, I believe, all got hurt. So it did help there. But Iowa, as soon as we want to say Iowa's finally arrived, they haven't arrived. And then IU, who can look so bad, can go out and beat Iowa and beat Ohio State. And I've always felt Ohio State was a little undersized and not real, and not the tough-minded teams that Thad's had. I think he's done an absolutely great job with him, honestly. But against IU the other night, Joe, to see all the layups and four-footers that Ohio State missed in the first 8 minutes of the game, or they would have had a 20-point lead on IU. And those are the kind of things you can't do if you're going to be considered one of the top conferences. Is the Big Ten considered that? Yes. Are they playing at that level? I don't think they are. So, no, I think the Big Ten is not as good as the Big Ten normally is. And, Joe, we know Purdue has not been able to close the deal, but against a lot of teams, they've been in the game up until the last 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah, they have. They have no against IU, they actually played a whole game, and they haven't played 40 minutes of a game very much this year, and that was one game they did, and it's frustrating to watch them fumble around like they do. So next question has to do with Purdue. Jay Simpson from Purdue was diagnosed with a heart condition that ended his career this week. Do you feel the testing for this condition should be part of an annual physical? That's from Barkley in Dallas.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's great to have listeners down in Dallas, Texas, Mark Cuban land. Here's my concern about that testing. I do think it would be great to add that to the list of testing because we know that over the years we have had some pretty great, potentially great players that die of these types of enlarged hearts and things like that. Here's the problem that I see. And guys, I'm just looking at it from the standpoint of overreaction to some of the testing. And then you could say, well, are you putting somebody's life on the line? Is that overreacting? That's not what I'm saying. I think if you do this testing, you have to do it in a way that's very conclusive. You can't say, well, we think we see this, or we think it might be this. I think there has to be some conclusiveness to the test because you're asking a young man or a young lady this test, and if it's not truly a conclusive test, it eliminates their opportunity to play basketball, to move further on in possibly a professional career, or whatever it might be. And I always worry about those types of tests being entered in. Example, Joe, you know it well just from grade school, and it is important because we do know concussions happen. But every time you fall and bump your head, are you at the threat of a concussion? I'm going to say no, and I know some people are going to say, you're not a doctor, but I did sleep at a Holiday Inn Express the other night. Every time you fall down, every time you bump your head, you don't have a concussion. And you're not in a threat of a concussion. But there are times when you have collisions with other players, especially in football with the hard ground, especially with the non-natural, can get these concussions, and you have to pay attention to it. But, Joe, you know, just in your own experiences, all of a sudden doctor says, well, I don't know, but the rule is, and you got to sit. And you got to wait till you're cleared. So
yeah, Reed sat for 3 weeks of a track season last year after hitting his head when he tripped over a hurdle. So yeah, you have to, once you're diagnosed with it, then the testing gets to be crazy. My wife had a girl on her volleyball team this year that got hurt in July and did not get cleared until the end of October. So, I mean, the testing is pretty extensive on that stuff, and, once you're diagnosed with it, and the way the schools are, once you're diagnosed with it, until a doctor clears you, you're basically, you're done.
Oh, and I understand how they feel because the liability factor that can exist, and that's why I'm saying, to answer your question, I think if they have a conclusive test, then I really do believe it would be a great thing to add to their physical. I don't know what the is. I don't know what the time factor is on this test. But if they can say this is, conclusive at the highest level, then I would agree with that, Joe.
Okay, next question comes from Randy in Montgomery, Indiana. When the coach on a team that is winning puts their subs in, why does the coach run the spread offense and try to hold the ball? It seems to me that while the starters have put the game out of reach and the subs are told to hold the ball, and I've seen the coach get really upset when the subs can't hold the ball and make several turnovers in the last minutes of the ball game. I know the game is out of reach, but if the subs can continue to run the offense and look for an opening for a layup or a good open shot, why couldn't they take that? Some coaches do the three-man weave out front and just try to run out the clock. I say these guys don't get to see much playing time. Let them play a little. What's your thoughts, Coach?
Well, that's kind of a mixed bag from an answer standpoint, and I understand the frustration. The mom or the dad or the brother or the sister of the player out there, here's their opportunity to get in the game, and they're going to hold the basketball. But let me tell you what the coach is probably thinking. You know, I took a lot of pride as a coach in my players going out on the floor, regardless if they were at the one spot as far as ability and playing time or the 12th spot or 10th spot. And what I mean by that is when we worked hard in practice, everybody on that team works hard in practice, whether they get a lot of playing time or not. Managers, where everybody works hard. And you want to make sure that they get and have an understanding of what they need to do if they get into a close game. So Randy, this isn't necessarily about a blowout or shooting or getting a feel for running up and down the floor. It's about how will you respond in a close game, in a situation where you have to go in the game because of injuries or foul troubles. Can you go in and handle the basketball and do the things you need to do on defense that make it clear you get it, you understand, and you work on it in practice, and you want to see it in the game now. And I used to tell our guys in a timeout, and we might call a timeout, and I'd bring them over and I'd say, listen, this is your opportunity to show that you get it, that you understand it. You need to end this game on the same level that the five guys out there were making this game. In other words, you need to look as good as they look from the standpoint of running the offense, making the passes, making the cuts, doing the things that we do. I know it can be frustrating as a fan and especially as a parent because I always say, I never forget the fact that when I'm not coaching, I'm a dad, and I act like a dad. But when I'm coaching, I act like a coach. And when you sub your people in, you want them to perform at a level that shows their practice has paid off, their time and effort has paid off, and that they get it because they will have their opportunity come when they are the main guy on the floor. And you want them to finish the game as well as the guys who started. Hope that helps.
Okay. Last question is, with Wednesday's loss to Nebraska, do you feel that IU's chances for an NCAA berth are over?
Oh, my gosh. What can I say? What can I say? They teased us again. I knew they would tease us. They teased us with wins over Iowa. They teased us with a win over Ohio State. And then they, you know, just when you think, my gosh, they've worked themselves back into a fringe opportunity. And if they do well in the Big Ten tournament, they might sneak in because other teams are losing. You know, things happen. And then, you know, Nebraska beats them. And the coach of Nebraska does a great job. And I know our Indy contributor will be coming on in a little bit to give us an update on Indianapolis sectionals, Don Schulteis. He was actually at the game. He was actually at the game, Nebraska-IU, and sat behind the Nebraska bench, and he just felt like when it came down, we got outplayed for sure and outcoached as well. But, yeah, they teased us again. There is absolutely, and unless they win the Big Ten tournament, or Tom Crean has Fred Glass have plants on the NCAA commission, there's no way they're getting in the NCAA tournament. They will get an NIT berth. And, Joe, we might, as we get another weekend, we might try to get Jerry Palm back on the show and give us his insight on that because I know they've been doing a lot of mock drafts. So, no, IU does not get in the NCAA tournament. They should get in the NIT.
Okay, that's all the questions we have this week.
All right, I think we've got our Indy contributor, Don Schulteis, is called in. Joe, let's do, if you want to do a quick break, we can do that. We come back, we'll get an update on Indianapolis sectionals.
Okay, here we go.
All right, listen to Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? We'll team up with the Coach K and Joe Show and form a winning marketing team, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. We've got our Indy contributor fresh off his front row seat in Bloomington behind the Nebraska Cornhusker section. He, folks, he's still an IU fan, but he has a buddy who got in touch with the coach at Nebraska and got him a nice seat. And I know some of you are saying, yeah, but he didn't ask you to go, Coach K. Yes, he did ask me to go, but I had another engagement and I couldn't go. But before we get into Indy High School sectional updates with Don Schulteis, Don, I welcome you to the show, and just quickly, just give us a quick review, and I mean quickly, about that IU-Nebraska game.
Out-coached, outplayed Coach K, and I have to say Tim Miles does an excellent job in his third year at Nebraska. He's got a team that, you know, is considered to be in the upper division of the conference now, and I'll tell you, their game plan was to zone Indiana, push Yogi out an extra step or two on the perimeter, double-team him coming off the ball screens, and we had no answer. Yogi did have 10 points, but he earned every one of them, and nobody else really stepped up from the outside to give force Nebraska to come out of that zone, and, you know, the rest is history, and we're going to go cry in our beer as the NCAA tournament rolls out.
And, you know, a win over Nebraska would have set up a critical game with Michigan. I mean, truly a critical game, because if you beat Iowa, Ohio State, then you come back with a win at home against Nebraska, you really have put yourself – the committees would have had to relook at IU and say, look, they've got top 20 wins, several of them, and then you got a critical game with Michigan, and who knows?
No doubt about it. I mean, you look back last year, it went down to the final game against Michigan for Indiana to really win at the buzzer and secure an outright Big Ten title or regular season Big Ten title for the first time in a number of years. And it wasn't all of that on the line, as Michigan had secured the Big Ten title earlier in the week. But for Indiana, there was a lot riding on this. And I just have to tell you that I'm frustrated and disappointed being a Hoosier fan and an alumni to see that we did not come with the kind of focus and energy at the level that we needed to compete at home against Nebraska when you needed that win. It's one thing to go into Michigan and not get the victory, but at home, last home game of the season, senior night, you're playing for, if nothing else, some pride, and didn't step up, Coach.
Don, is my recollection correct? Is that two straight seasons, I mean, from a competitive standpoint, where IU has lost on senior night or lost their last regular season home game?
I think you're correct. And
yeah.
No, I know those are emotional nights. I know those are emotional nights, but you still have to get it done, and especially when something as big as this is riding on it, you got to find a way to win, and that just kind of tells you where the team is and how far we have to come between now and next year.
Well, we will get old, and we will get better, and not having
Bonlay didn't help. But still, I go back to, you can't make excuses for these guys because they're going to start believing those excuses. And they beat Ohio State. They beat Iowa. Gosh darn it. Get your butt in gear at that last home game and beat Nebraska and put yourself in a position where you can control your destiny, really, to get an NCAA bid. And I really believe they would have backed. I know people weren't talking about them, but I think had they beaten Nebraska, they would have been talking about them and this game with Michigan. I got to give a lot of kudos to Michigan to be where they are at, Big Ten champs. Coach Beilein has done a great job. And for all my criticisms, and folks, I know I've had a few. Sounds like a Frank Sinatra song. Michigan has defied the last 2 years, and Coach Beilein's system and his recruits, even though they're perimeter-oriented, they've gotten the job done, Don.
They have, and Coach Beilein deserves a lot of credit. Him and his staff and his players have really, they're performing at a level, at a championship level now year in and year out, and there's a tradition and expectation he's been able to rebuild there. And, you know, a lot of, to the envy, I think, of a lot of the other Big Ten programs, i.e. Indiana right now, because we got there for a couple of years, but you got to have it every year, and Purdue's really struggling to get back there.
Well, we've had struggles in the state on the college level and last week in the pro level. But having said that, I look at Michigan, and I know some of our diehard Michigan State listeners are saying, yeah, well, If our club wouldn't have had injuries. But you know what I say to that? They still had to win the games. Michigan still had to come out. They couldn't stub their toe. They had to win the games both at home and on the road. And Coach Beilein and his group did that. And we're disappointed here in Indiana. If you're an IU fan, you're struggling. You knew your team was young. But still, you expect more because these were high expectations on these recruits. If you're a Purdue fan, you just can't figure how to turn the corner. Is this team ever going to turn the corner? I think Purdue struggles, Don and Joe. I just think they're not very sharp IQs on the basketball court. And I think when you have guards that think exactly alike and they don't think the right way, I think that's a struggle. And Joe, I know you just mentioned to me that, you know, Michigan did it without McGarry. You're right. McGarry's been hurt all year. And Michigan was able to find an answer. So for all the Michigan States, for all the IUs, for all the Purdues, you got to look at a team like Michigan and say, whatever came at them, graduation, guys leaving early, injuries, Coach Beilein's system worked. It just worked. And, Joe, I know you're a major Purdue fan, and I know Tom Dienert of the Big Ten Network, one of their main senior writers, his comments on Purdue aren't much better.
Yeah, he's not real happy with the direction of the football or basketball team right now, as are most of us. There's even been a suggestion and a joke going around, instead of boiler up, it needs to be changed to boiler down. And I know a lot of people really, really, really have been adamant about the defense lives here sign coming down from Mackey Arena until it's earned to be put back up.
You know, it's tough to coach, and it's tough to play at a high level consistently. You got to work together as a team. Fans are great. And, Don, I mentioned, and I know you're a dad of a player. I was answering a question about coach's mentality. And as I tell people all the time, you know, if a parent says, well, I probably should be like that or something like that. You know, when I'm a dad, I'm a dad. And when I'm a coach, the mentality changes. I know what we need to do. I know how we need to do it as a team. But when you're a dad, you're a dad. And when you're a fan and an alum of a major university that you're used to seeing success and you're paying a lot of money, well, you got your thoughts, right?
No doubt about it. And I give a lot of credit to the staff and the kids. I know they're working hard, but the fact of the matter is they have not gotten to the level, at least consistency, that we expect. And praise the good Lord that we expect that, because if we didn't expect it, that means our tradition would not be there
So, you know, we've got the bar set high, and it should be set high, and I'm sure they'll get back there. They just haven't been able to do it this year. And, Coach, it looks like Indiana might be paired in the NIT if Indiana State doesn't win the MVC Arch Madness this weekend. They could be going head-to-head in the first round of the NIT. That's at least the talk up here. Who's going to win that game?
You know, that would be a great pairing from a fan base. It certainly would make money for the NIT and the schools involved. I'll tell you that I've seen Indiana State play, and I think IU in the matchup physically is better, but Indiana State probably plays a better brand of basketball as far as what it would take from a team standpoint. And if Vonleh's not there and they have a way to defend Yogi from getting those easy shots off, I don't know. I think it could be a toss-up. You know, of course, if you're booking it, you're probably going to say Big Ten versus Missouri Valley. It would be an interesting matchup for the fans in this state. You know, one other thing, Don, you mentioned before we talk about Indianapolis sectionals, you talked about they're working hard. They're working hard. I'm going to go back to a statement I make every year on this show several times, and I make every year if I'm coaching or teaching, whatever I was doing, hard work isn't the difference. It's focus and purpose in that hard work. You got to make sure you're moving the bricks to the right pile, and I always use that analogy, Don, because I remember the year you worked for a concrete company or something like that, and you were moving bricks a lot. So if you move all the bricks to the wrong pile and you do it as beautifully and cleanly as anybody's ever done it, you still move them to the wrong pile. So I guess we got to figure out, you know, are we going in, is our purpose in how hard we're working and what we're doing, is it in the right direction? Don, let's jump on Indiana High School Basketball State Tournament up in the Indianapolis area. I know those first rounds started out, and you were in the stands. Tough loss for what many considered the fifth best team up in the Indianapolis area, Cathedral Irish.
Well, the Irish met up with a very athletic Warren Central team. They had played earlier in the year, and I think the difference was only 4 or 5 points in Cathedral's favor. I knew it was going to be tough. You were up for the Ben Davis Cathedral game. You know, athletic teams, as Ben Davis is also, kind of give Cathedral fits. I did predict Cathedral would win that game. I just felt like we would have enough of skill from the outside and the guard play to overcome. But to no avail. It came down. They had a 4-point lead with probably about a minute to go. I'm talking about Warren Central. We had come back and hit two big shots to tie the game, and at that point I really thought we were going to be able to get it done. But, you know, they came back, didn't even call a timeout, held the ball to the last second. A guy made a move to the basket. The defender came over to help, and right at that instant, he shot a pass over to the corner, and a sophomore who is a great shooter but had been basically held to 2 points the whole game and missed a ton of threes because of the defense was open for that split second, wanted it, felt it, and hit the shot, and they won the game.
Yeah, I know that's never easy, and that's the great thing about the Indiana High School Basketball State Tournament. If you don't come and things don't fall your way, you know, it's not that you don't come to play. Maybe the other team it just comes in and everything falls right for them, and they're playing at a high level as well, and it just bounces their way. They were able to stay close. They were able to get a lead. They were able to keep it where they needed to and then hit the shot when they needed to. What else happened in that sectional?
Well, then in the second game, an Indianapolis Tech team who I know you and your listeners have listened to me talk about for the past 2 years just dominated Lawrence North in the second game. One, going away by 30. I think they emptied the bench with over 6 minutes to go and just destroyed LN, who has a tradition in high school basketball. And they just did a heck of a job. In the other sectional at Noblesville, the other key sectional in the 4A was Carmel Carmel's tight victory over Zionsville. They had been behind with a couple of minutes to go by 4 points as well, and were able to come in and take the lead for good, but it was a hard-fought game. So you've got Tech playing a Lawrence Central team, and Lawrence Central will beat Cathedral, play Ron Colley. The winners will match up tomorrow for the championship. And then in the Noblesville sectional, you've got Carmel playing North Central, which is going to be a tough road for them. And then in that second game, Noblesville will be playing Hamilton Southeastern. So there is a chance that Hamilton Southeastern will get to the championship. And then Carmel, who's the favorite, is going to have to play their best game against Aaron Gordon in North Central. And then down in 2A, where we've got Trevon Blewett, everybody likes to follow his progress, Park Tudor. How's that sectional lineup as we go into the semifinal weekend? Well, Cecina will be playing Howe tonight. Park Tudor's got a pretty easy road tonight. So I think Cecina, I've seen Howe play. They're a good, solid team, and they're well coached. So I think Cecina's going to have the harder matchup tonight. But I do suspect that it'll be Cecina and Park Tudor in the final tomorrow night. And as I said a couple of weeks ago, I was at the Park Tudor Cecina regular season game a few weeks ago, and it was all Park Tudor. But knowing the coaching staff, and I know you have a good friend that's on that staff, they're going to be prepared and have a couple of things up their sleeve if they're able to get to meet them again in a championship. And then up around Marion, where we have vaunted IU recruit James Blackman Jr., who has scored a ton of points this year, the Marion Giants, where do they stand as we're in this sectional? Well, they're playing tonight against the Kokomo Wildcats with a K, and Kokomo's got a good, solid team. So they're going to be playing for the chance to get to the final game. The pundits up here, I have to admit, I haven't seen the Marion team play or the Wildcats, but the pundits and experts who have seen them play suspect that Marion will probably eke into the final game tomorrow and have a chance to win a sectional for the first time in a number of years. Yeah, so a lot of good stuff, a lot of good basketball to be played up in Indianapolis. Don, any other teams or sectional locations of note? Yeah, I think over at Ben Davis, you've got an Indianapolis Bike team that has a tradition-rich program. Although they've lost six out of the last seven, they're playing host Ben Davis in the semifinal. And Ben Davis has been playing pretty solid here as of late in the last few weeks of the season. So that's going to be a highly intense game. It's a rivalry game, and it'll be for a chance to get to the championship. So that's going to be a good one. And then your buddy Bobby Carter, Coach Carter's team from Mooresville, is going to be playing Brownsburg at the Avon sectional. Brownsburg is a very good team. I think they've only lost two or three this year and ranked very high in the area, top three, I think, as we closed out the season. So, you know, Mooresville's had a, I think, 18-4 season and has had a very good year. So it's going to be a darn good game as well. So a lot of good basketball up here in the semifinal round of the sectional. I just wish my Irish would be in there fighting it out. I wanted another chance at Tech. So I'm sure you did, and what a matchup that would have been. But the sectional tournament, you got to live to play another day, and some of the teams you hope will, they don't. And so they got to go home or they got to go to the stands and watch, and it is not easy to do. But good luck to all these teams. Great stuff, Don, talking about the Indianapolis area. Remember, folks, as we end this, the Aces did win against Drake. They'll play Wichita State in Arch Madness, the NBC tournament over in St. Louis. The Great Lakes Valley Conference Tournament, the girls, is going on in Evansville. Boys will be coming on. And, Joe, you're up. You got to take us home.
Well, as always, I always tell you, our listeners, to, you know, if you got something, you don't have anything to do this weekend, you want to find a great form of entertainment for the price, I got high school basketball. You've got the state finals in Indianapolis. It is Indianapolis, right, Coach?
Yes, it's in Indiana. No, it's in Terre Haute. You've got Terre Haute, which is close by. Reveille,
just when I said
Modern Day.
So good luck to those teams. If you don't have, you know, just I said, take your family out, go to your local sectional, go to the girls' state finals. For the money, you can't find a better form of entertainment. For Coach K, for Don Schulteis, this is Joe Milligan saying we'll see you next week on the Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Ubelar and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. See you next week.